pretty often about communication, you know, no matter what we talk about, sex, intimacy, relationships, money, children, family of origin, it all boils down to effective communication. And I would say that all couples, all long-term couples, need to learn how to talk about difficult things, because that's life.
The Big Wedding Planning Podcast.
Just two wedding planners tearing it up. Listen, learn.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the Big Wedding Planning Podcast, a show for anyone involved in planning a wedding. We want you to learn something valuable and be entertained at the same time. My name is Michelle Martinez.
And I'm Christy Matthews. Thank you for joining us. You are going to be so happy that you did, that you pulled up this episode, or that you landed here, because we have such a stellar guest today.
I know this is like groundbreaking, I feel like, for our show, because it's a departure than what we normally talk about.
Because we're certainly not going to be the experts on this.
Oh,
topic.
God, no. No, we, that is, oh yeah, that's, we are not so, the experts
and here's one thing, this guest we have has an office, as many guests have, but if you were going to be a fly on the wall of somebody's professional life and just listen in to what they do all day, this, at least for me, I'd be like, that's the wall I want to be on, because I'm so curious about it all, and I just like eat it up whenever I hear podcasts about it or, you know, articles, so... Without further ado.
So we are talking to today Dr. Magdalena Fossey. Is that how you say it? And what should we call you?
Magdalena?
You don't want me to call you Dr. Fossey? Okay. So I met Magdalena actually at a wedding, right? I mean, I don't know if we met. We did, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So Lauren Starr, who has been on our show, is a yoga instructor, my master teacher. I helped her plan her wedding. And through Lauren being so supportive of our show and being such an amazing person, she recommended Magdalena to us to speak to. And this all stemmed from, after we recorded with Lauren, she said, you guys, I have a great idea for a show. She said, you should talk about whether or not people have sex on their wedding night. And we're like, oh, like we were laughing. Like, we made jokes about it. But at the same time, we're like, yeah, kind of a lot of people don't. Mm-hmm. And if they do, they're just doing it because they feel like they have to. And then it turned into this whole thing, right? Like, we should find a sex therapist. We should talk about relationships. And so... what we're doing today is a two-part series, because we feel like we obviously always talk about the logistics of planning a wedding. How do you do it? We zoom in parts, right? But something that we don't talk about, because we're not that kind of show, but something that a lot of people don't talk about going into a marriage, right, is how to communicate. Right?
What it means to
expectations, what it means to be in a partnership with another person, and how that communication can help during the planning process. So there's lots to talk about.
Mm-hmm.
And I personally am like kind of obsessed with these
topic.
Subjects.
Yeah,
yeah,
me too.
This topic.
And as wedding planners, we do talk so much about, like you said, all the logistics, but we also talk about how you need to remain connected to your partner and take some time.
Yeah.
And we've on several episodes talked about like taking a break from wedding planning and make sure you're still just like dating your partner. And all of those things are from the perspective of two wedding planners who are also wives. We've been married to our husbands for, you know, many years between the two of us, but we have to remind ourselves about that too, like stay connected and keep reaching out and don't stop kissing and all of those things. So we thought it would be so perfect to talk about how that can be, needs to be a really important part of your process before you get married, because marriage is kind of a big deal. And we don't know that people are like really delving into that idea so much as it's like, oh, it's a marriage. I'm not supposed to sleep with anybody else. And we're supposed to do this until we die. That's it. And it's,
yeah.
And
but we're going to plan this big ass wedding right now. It's going to be awesome.
And we're just going to focus on that. That's our focus. That's the important part. And Michelle and I have said many times, like the wedding is just a party. It's an awesome party and it's a really important day, but it is not nearly as hard as being married or as important for the role that you're going to be. So people get wrapped up in the wedding planning process and the wedding, but we try to remind our listeners to remember that marriage is a pretty big step that you're taking. So we'd love to hear Magdalena's perspective on that, having worked with, you know, countless couples before they get married and also afterwards. And I'm sure you see a lot of like common pitfalls. So
let me do the intro of Magdalena, because we always kind of say when we have a guest, like, well, what makes you an expert? And I think she is. So Dr. Magdalena Fossey is a clinical psychologist, sex therapist, couples counselor, consultant. You're a couples therapist, an AASECT certified sex therapist, on the faculty and board of directors of Psychodynamic Couples and Families Institute of New England, PCFINE, PC Fine. PC Fine provides postgraduate training in couples therapy for experienced clinicians. In her private practice in Cambridge, Massachusetts, which is where we are right now, Dr. Fossey works with people of all genders and sexual orientations struggling with issues of sexuality and intimacy. She is passionate about helping individuals and couples to achieve higher levels of relational and sexual satisfaction, helping people form and sustain fulfilling relationships rooted in deep intimacy and healthy sexuality. Many of Dr. Fossey's clients are consensually non-monogamous, and she has developed particular expertise counseling clients exploring challenges of polyamory, which is a whole nother thing. Mm-hmm. And not necessarily what's going on with, you know, most of our listeners, but hey, who knows? and you do a lot of lectures on this subject in the Boston area, and your colleagues have dubbed you Queen of Polyamory, which is, that's kind of a cool, I like it's that.
Like, sounds like a magical kingdom.
Yeah. So, thank you so much for making the time to talk with us, because I know you're in the middle of writing a book and you see patients and, you know, you're a busy woman. But thank you.
Thank you so much. I'm really delighted to be on your podcast. And so I listened to one of your podcasts, and then you mentioned that when couples get engaged, they should find a therapist. And I was so delighted to hear that. So over the years, having worked with a number of individuals and couples who are getting married, the issue of wedding planning distress was the highest on the list. And so indeed, it's really helpful. Not everyone does that, not everyone thinks about that, but the fact that you are mentioning it immediately, it's an important message for people listening. And to comment a little about my two different hats that I'm wearing, I see couples who are monogamous and who plan to spend their life with their partners. That's still the majority of people. And there are a number of people who are exploring consensual non-monogamy, a very different approach, very different beast, and both are valid, but it doesn't mean that one has to lead to the other. Absolutely not.
I love the question you have, Michelle, kind of at the end, and that's what do couples fear might happen in their relationships? I'm guessing that they might fear that they're going to spend the rest of their life sitting on a couch watching TV. And,
oh, really?
And that's that. But maybe a couple isn't actually doing anything about it. Is that a fear, kind of just like boredom or apathy? We're just going to keep on doing this. You're nice. I like you. We've got this house. Let's just sit on the couch.
I actually think that you guys probably hear more about it. So I would like to hear from both of you. What do people say that when you are working with them, planning a wedding, what are their fears? Because people already come here with a problem. They don't necessarily come so much with like, what's my fear? So I wonder about your experience.
Well, when it comes to wedding planning, their biggest fear is that they're going to forget something. That something's going to slip through the cracks and they're going to make a massive mistake and it's all going to be a disaster.
A waste of money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to like them as a couple, I think I feel like what's pretty common that once we're married, these problems we have will go away. Like once we're married, I expect he won't go out with his friends anymore and ignore my texts on a Friday night. And once we're married, you know, she'll stop harping on me about how I need to lose 20 pounds and that it's like magical thinking. Of course, that's not going to happen once you're married. If it's happening now, chances are it's still going to happen when you're married. So the fear is like, what if this is it? And what if, like, you know, I think a lot of couples deal with each other's families and that kind of is hard for them. Like, it's not necessarily a fear, but it's like, I don't want to deal with your mom, you know, my mother-in-law telling me how to raise my kids or clean my house or, you know, live my life. So it's like, I don't know if fear is the right word, but it's just an anxiety that people might have going in from being just a couple to now a married couple. That little things that annoy you about each other is just gonna either evaporate or, you know, the worst case scenario is that everything just gets worse after you get married.
I would think, nobody really talks to me about what their fears are for their relationship. You know, I don't really get into that with them. I mean, we talk about compromise and things at certain times with regard, you know, I'll make a joke like, okay, you know, if they're having a problem deciding on something or arguing, I'll say, you know, it's all about compromise. Like, that's what marriage is about. Let's compromise. But I would think most people's fears going into a relationship are either one of two things. One being betrayal, infidelity, being cheated on. And then the second might be boredom. Yeah. That's what I would think. But what do I know?
No, you know a lot. You both know a lot. You are married. You are in a relationship. You know the delights and pitfalls of a relationship. And you actually, when you were talking about how, you know, people have this expectation that, so Christy, when you said that after people get married, it will be great. All the problems that existed before, they will magically disappear, the magical thinking. And that's exactly what it is, magical thinking. The problems that existed before don't go away. They may go away, but then some of them won't. But others, it depends on like how people are approaching it. And then their understanding of what it means. Connecting it to what Michelle said, so infidelity, betrayal, yes, that's a big fear. And it's a huge topic in itself, impossible to address in a few sentences. Why do people stray? What's betrayal? And that touches upon the whole issue of are we monogamous as species or not? So a separate 20 or 20 or 100 podcast in itself. But shortly, I mentioned disappointment before, and disappointment comes in many flavors. And disappointment combined with belief that people try to address something, but it was that they didn't succeed, may lead to disillusionment and eventually to people, engaging in some transgressions and betrayals. And what people's beliefs of trying are, it also varies enormously.
One thing you mentioned before we started was that sometimes you feel a little bit like you're in the wedding planner's shoes because you're seeing people when they're planning their weddings, and I'm sure that's what they're talking about a lot. And it struck me that we when we work with people who are getting married in like a Catholic church, for example, part of the process to do it at the church is therapy or like classes almost that they take with the father or the deacon of the church. And it's required for certain denominations. And I do have couples that have gone through that, or it's like a couple's retreat, or, and they, you know, they talk about expectations and children and finances and ways to be successful at their marriage. So it struck me that what you do is similar to that without the religious part. Do couples come to you and just say straight up, like, we want to be successfully married and we have a year before we have our wedding. We want to work on things. And then you just go from there? Or do they have really specific issues?
That's right. I have some couples who come and for the equivalent of prenuptial counseling. And it doesn't have any religious undertones. And because most of my clients, they know that I'm a sex therapist. So that's the leading question. They usually come and say, I want to make sure that our relationship is successful and long-lasting and that we have a satisfying, intimate, and sexual life. So it's immediately more targeted. But it's not possible to talk about sexuality and intimacy without talking about communication, without talking about background, what people bring to relationships. So people often come and think that, well, it will be just one, maybe two meetings, like it is often with prenuptial counseling in different churches. And so it turns out maybe to a longer exploration, because it's not just a manual that I'm giving them. Mm-hmm. Think about this. It's actually more of an exploration. And it's about building a healthy relationship. And that involves actually being able to talk constructively and without embarrassment about intimacy and sexuality.
What do you think is the most common roadblock or like problem, I guess, that couples put right at your feet with this? Like, we're getting married, we're really committed to that, but here's this giant issue we're having and we need your help to solve it before the wedding.
That's a big question, an excellent question. How to answer it in very few sentences? It really depends, because some couples, it really depends on their prior sexual history, relationship history. I would say that most people, when they get married, one thing on their minds is that they don't want to repeat the mistakes of their parents or other people they know. So they observe who is around them. And in many ways, everyone, when getting married, is idealistic, believing that our relationship will be different, we'll do it differently, without realizing that whether they were in a long-term relationship before or not, everyone has a baggage. Everyone comes from a family, has some more or less well-defined definitions of how things should work. And then working through these tensions, it requires a lot of effort. So, you know, people come here and some of them immediately tell me that, you know, I came from a religious background and or I come from a religious background. And, you know, it was always, I was always told that sex cannot happen until after we are married. Mm. And I try to adhere to that. But actually, I don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm supposed to be doing, what I'm supposed to be saying or feeling. And with this kind of openness, it already like lays the ground for exploration. And then, you know, and I can give people suggestions what to read, how to educate themselves. And then as they go and read or practice, so then can come back and we can look at it and work through whatever knots that they encountered. So that would be one example. Another one would be pretty often about communication. You know, no matter what we talk about, sex, intimacy, relationships, money, children, family of origin, it all boils down to effective communication. And I would say that all couples, all long-term couples, need to learn how to talk about difficult things, because that's life. It will happen no matter what. life will present difficulties, and being able to communicate constructively about it, it's essential. Mm.
So you said you don't give people a manual. Is there like certain lessons or ways to practice communicating that way? I wouldn't know where to start, you know, if I came to you and said, like, we just argue all the time, or I cannot talk to him about pleasure, or, you know, what do I do?
Well, there are some instructional, you know, you can call it manuals, but basically guidance how to communicate. In my experience, people can go and read it, but then they come back and they say, like, well, so we read it and we tried and it still didn't work. Mm. It's a very different story to read about communication, how to do it. And it's a very different story to actually put it into practice. So when I see couples and they are in front of me communicating, I can immediately identify what's happening, what goes wrong. It's not only the words, it's not only verbal communication, it's nonverbal clues that we are reading. We are reading them much faster than we are comprehending words. And so I can help couples stop, slow down, and identify moments in which from seemingly innocuous conversation, it suddenly becomes a very triggered argument. Mm. And when it happens, it goes from 0 to 100. And we read each other's body language. So a person might say something seemingly innocent, but with a tone of voice that is conveying a different message. And the couple is fighting in front of me. So I'm in a very different position, privileged position, to be able to help on the spot and help people, model to people how to slow down, how not to escalate and get to a point where from which it's very hard to return.
Do you have a lot of couples that come to you before they're married? Like, they actually are taking this proactive step?
There are some couples. I wouldn't say that's the majority. More people come when they realize that there is a problem. And but every now and then, I'm truly surprised by a couple coming in and saying, like, we want to make sure that we are doing it right. And the first couple who came and said that, I was so delighted and surprised. And I thought, like, well, they are really unique. But then there were many others. So it's not a norm, but it does happen.
What would you say are the biggest reasons, right, that couples go through problems and end up needing to come to a therapist? Like, obviously, a big one would be communication. Where do people go wrong? And how about we start there? Where do people go wrong in communication? Like, what are some maybe tips? I mean, you said body language, tone of voice, listening. I'm answering this, aren't I? You go for it.
Okay, so let me first say something about crisis. When people come here and they are indeed in crisis, crisis is a top of the iceberg. It was usually such a build-up, and something tipped them over, and they decided to seek therapy. And the build-up doesn't mean that people didn't try to address things. They actually did, and often thought about it. And so it's a painful process. But when they concluded that, or as often happens, when they conclude that, okay, we've been really trying, and we are still stuck. So that's when they might contact me. So back to the tip of the iceberg. It's because usually it's not, you know, sometimes it's a big thing, but very often it's small things that people let go of, and it's like a droplet of water filling up the glass, and then it spills over. So in terms of tips, John Gottman has a number of excellent books on relationships and how to succeed in relationships. So he's talking about the ratio of positive to negative. And that's a very important tip. Mm. So the magic ratio is 5 to 1. 5 positive interactions to 1 negative one. Now you might ask, like, So how do we count positive to negative? Some negative ones might be so huge. Mm-hmm. Well, it might be challenging, but it's if you just generally keep it in mind that if you know, even when there is a conflict, but otherwise interactions, small exchanges throughout the day are positive, so that one difficult one is still outweighed by the overall positive. He's also talking about language, and in very specific way, he's talking about four riders of apocalypse. So things that really can lead to a buildup of a conflict, and sometimes a conflict that cannot be resolved. So the four riders are contempt, so anything communicated with contempt, with defensiveness, criticism, or stonewalling. Those are the four riders of apocalypse leading to a major crisis. Actually, his research is fascinating. He videotaped thousands of couples having an argument in front of him, and then just based on the analysis of these interactions, he came with incredible predictive statistics of, you know, in somewhere in the 90% or above being able to predict which couples will stay together and which will break up.
I read that contempt, and this must have been his because it was the same thing, that contempt was what was his strongest predictor, because once you get to contempt, yes, you can't, it's almost impossible to go back. Contempt being more than just like, I'm so annoyed with you, or I hate it when you do this, but actual like anger and disgust in your very core for your partner.
Yes, you are right.
Yowza.
Okay, but now we are talking about all these negative things that can happen in relationships. But this podcast is about wedding planning and hope for the future.
So. Yes, you're right. Knowing that you talk to people before they get married, and they might have experienced a lot of these like pitfalls and these issues, but a big way that you're working with them is to improve their communication, mm-hmm, before they walk down the aisle.
Yes. The work doesn't stop there. So that's one of the myths that, you know, if people figure out everything and now they are getting married, so after the wedding night, everything will be a rose garden, dance on roses, whatever you want, like whatever rose, mm-hmm, metaphor. It's not. It's still work. It's relationships require investment. I've heard couples exclaim with disbelief, is saying that, nobody told me that marriage is hard work.
We've told them.
Yes. And we live in a culture that we are surrounded by messages about relationships and sex. And then sex is everywhere. And it seems so easy. But then also messages, implicit messages like coming from the media, from Hollywood movies. It always ends with a wedding night and you know, perhaps sex and then the mutual orgasm.
Right.
And yeah. And after that, everything is just so easy. That's not reality. Reality is that anything that we want to succeed at, it requires our practice, investment, and willingness to try differently. So the wedding night and preparation, relational preparation until that day is just part of the process.
Are there any other kind of like a recipe or building blocks to, you know, having a strong relationship or keeping connected to your partner? I mean, in the beginning, before children, and then, you know, maybe because I know that once you go into having children, it's a whole nother ballgame, right? So maybe like setting foundation, like what would be recommendations you have based on things that you've seen through your patients?
One common thing is how little time people are devoting to the relationship. And the assumption is because people are living together, getting married, so they have seemingly endless time and opportunities to spend quality time. However, most of the quality time is spent at the end of the day when people are tired and watching TV. And on the one hand, it feels very nice, relaxing. But on the other hand, it also leads to some dissatisfaction building up. Mm-hmm. So for the relationships to feel rewarding, it requires effort, requires energy for you know, both partners to be willing to do something and not just go with what feels what's the easiest.
And kind of like a bad habit, yes. Almost, even though you're sitting next to each other and your legs are touching, but no one's taking the initiative to push it outside of the norm, the normal habit.
Exactly. Or, you know, you are spending this, if you think about how much time most people spend on work and how anxious they are about their work quality performance and then making sure that they are doing really good work job, provided that they like what they are doing. But even if they don't, still that's the top priority for most people. And the relational assumption is that it will happen by itself.
Ah.
So the building blocks is its willingness. It's you know, so back to the positive to negative ratio. They don't have to be huge things. You know, small surprises, small detours from the routines, they matter a lot. And, you know, sitting on the couch watching TV night after night and hoping that somehow magically it would feel great, well, it's like a definition of insanity, the old definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over again and hoping for different results. But even like how we define monogamy, it really varies. So it's in a moment of some mini crisis that couples start talking about their expectations. What's actually this vow, monogamy vow? So let's say that you know, you see your partner hugging another person at the party and then maybe giving a kiss on the cheek or even on the mouth, but not French kiss, just a kiss. So for one person, that might be betrayal. It's like, that's not what I agreed to. That's not within the monogamy boundaries. And the other person who might be used to more physical contact would think like, well, that's not a problem. I'm not doing anything that I wouldn't do otherwise. I've always been that way with my friends. So suddenly they are working through it. And then, so we are talking about betrayal for one person, but a huge surprise for the other person. Like, why are we even talking about this issue? I really didn't intend to hurt you. There was nothing wrong with mm-hmm. what I did. It's a whole conversation because, again, it touches upon people's backgrounds, where they came from, where are their personal boundaries.
So do you think most couples, it sounds like, are not maybe having these conversations ahead of time in a really not vague way? Like, these are my boundaries. This is what I think is cheating. This is what I don't consider a big deal. It's maybe those conversations aren't actually being had until it's trouble, crisis point, rather than having them in almost preventative way before you get married, just like you would talk about what kind of neighborhood you want to live in and what, you know, what kind of bed you want to buy one day when you're a couple, you know, married, that people are skipping this talk.
Well, not everything can be done preventively. Simply, you cannot address every single issue, you know, and mm-hmm. and be prepared. So many things just come as a result of experience. So you can talk about what kind of bed you want to buy, but it's only after sleeping in the bed for a, you know, few weeks or a couple of months that you will realize, like, oh, it's not really the bed that I hoped that it would be.
Mm-hmm.
So conversations in anticipations are relevant, but then actually being open to talking about things as they come, that's even more important.
Right.
Okay, so this brought up another question, but what I was going to ask you are, for those listening, if they were going to make a list, maybe of five things or less, what do you think they should talk about? Like, okay, I want to have two kids. How many kids do you want to have, right? Like, that's usually the thing. Like, well, how many kids do you want to have? Where do you want to live, right? But are there other things that they should talk about and listen to from the other partner and give their expectations on, you know, X, Y, and Z? Are there things that you think they should talk about that perhaps most couples don't? She's like, I don't know.
That's a great question, and I don't think I've ever been asked to put it in this format, like 5 points.
Or four or three.
You know, so let me think about it. Let's move to another one, and then so let's my brain process it so I can actually come with something that will be succinct.
Well, another question I had are, what are the reasons most couple, not that most couples do, but those that do, what are the reasons that they're kind of getting lost, you know, in their relationship? And then it leads to these, like you say, the drips of water filling up the glass. What are the most common things that happen?
So many of these things are based on misreading, misunderstandings. As I'm here sitting with you, Michelle, and looking at you, so recording this podcast, and then so I'm watching your language, your body language, you are watching me. So we are immediately responding to each other without any words being exchanged. And because so many of the things that we perceive are processed on the unconscious level, somewhere like between 95 or 98% of our functioning in the world, in this present moment, it's unconscious. It can also lead to misinformation, to interpretations that are not correct. So couples will go wrong. I would say that's expecting it as a norm. And also, it's not the presence of conflict that it's a problem. It's the absence of repair. So let me actually repeat it. It's not the presence of a conflict, it's the absence of repair. There is a lot of research on that. It's about attachment. You know, many people talk about that attachment nowadays, not only in the clinical office, but then just like, what's, you know, what kind of styles of attachment, what's our attachment form? And within attachment, the concept of repair is crucial. So you can think about, like, you know, whatever conflict you might have had with your own partners, spouses, and the difference between the moment when there is an argument and you are not able to resolve it, go to bed feeling upset, frustrated, angry, and then wake up the next morning and it's still there, and then you are still unable to address it, and then eventually just let go of it, but it doesn't really go away, compared to the situation when there is maybe a big issue, you know, painful argument, but then you come to the resolution, you come to a place where you are exhausted, but you actually feel closer to your partner. There is a certain relief, and it's really a visceral experience of actually feeling closer to your beloved.
Yeah, that makes sense.
I see Michelle nodding, and I see you, Christine, nodding as well. Wow. That's the difference. That's the repair.
Right. It's that then when the initial conflict or whatever it was might have been a small thing gets, after weeks of not repairing it or after weeks of not addressing it or feeling not listened to or stonewalled, or then it becomes way bigger than it actually was initially, the issue. And it's how you're dealing with it rather than the argument itself or the crime itself or the deed itself. I think that's a way that marriages and relationships kind of ebb and flow in a way that doesn't feel good. It's like, it's just a little thing. If we would just talk about it and listen to each other and sort it out, we can put it away. But instead it becomes more than it should have been, more than it needed to be, because we weren't actually dealing with it.
I, I came to you thinking I want to help people prevent what could go wrong, but what you just said makes me understand that it shouldn't be about preventing things from going wrong, that we should accept and allow that they will. And I think what I'm hearing also is to just make sure you're not ignoring things, right? Like just hit it head on. And the repair part of things, right? Like, I didn't even think about the repair part. I'm thinking about, okay, let's just not allow this to happen. And much as a wedding planner, I'm like taking the steps, you know, making my lists. And
try to problem solve before there's a problem.
Problem solve before there's a problem. No assumption, right? That's the word assumption is like big X. We don't assume things, you know, all of these things. So yeah, it's funny because you just kind of blew my mind a little bit because I just was thinking prevent. And it's not about that. Is that what I'm taking away?
Yes, that's a good takeaway. You are preventing problems, issues from happening for one day, one night. And imagine applying it to the whole life. It's just not possible. And the fact that you can work preventively, it's because you've done it so many times. Each relationship is different. There is no formula that would make people prepared for everything going right or going wrong. It's called being in life. You know, so being in love, it's easy in many ways because there is all this energy and then people are so willing to do things, crazy things. But being in life means encountering issues. People erroneously assume that if they are not fighting, everything is great. The absence of fighting, it's not a sign of healthy relationship, not necessarily a sign of a healthy relationship. Fighting, you know, some couples are more comfortable with fighting, you know, to stereotype for a second, like Italian style. So basically big emotions and then like, I'm mad at you, I'm going to kill you. And the next moment like, oh, I love you. You know, that's one style of fighting. If a couple's fighting style is matching, they don't see any problems with that.
Mm-hmm.
It's more on the other end, like when people assume that, well, we are not fighting whatsoever, but then are not really satisfied in their relationship. It probably means that there are issues that they are not addressing, that they are avoiding them, and then they continue going through life feeling not exactly happy, perhaps even miserable. When couples fight, they really try to address something. The problem is that they are typically talking about two different sides of the problem, and they are doing it at the same time. It's very hard to hear the other person when you are speaking with the loud noise and the other person is doing the same thing. So that's also what I'm helping couples with. You know, when they in front of me start escalating and stop hearing each other, it's so I step in. I help them to slow down, to actually learn how to listen. But yes, repair is the key. And also learning how to prevent. So, you know, so within your field, how to prevent a major escalation. Because then it's much harder to return, to come to a place where repair is possible. It's if people can slow down enough, they can recognize where they are getting off and then to a point of no return. Because then there is no possibility of any soft, constructive conversation. So if they can slow down and stop then, even take a break, time out, and then return, that's much more a recipe for success.
I think about the pressure that a lot of people feel, perhaps, I would assume, on having perfection, right? Like one of my things is if I meet with a potential client and at any point in time they use the word perfect referring to their wedding, I probably don't want to work with them. Mm-hmm. Because I feel like there's no such thing as perfection. It's very unrealistic. Personally, that's what I feel. But I wonder how many people feel this pressure to have, like, the perfect relationship, right? There's couples walking around holding hands. We have no idea what's going on behind closed doors. And also, you know, depending on how we were brought up, whether we come from a divorced family, a married family, happily married, non-happily, stayed together because of the kid, you know, it's just different for everybody, isn't it? But I wonder how much of the pressure we put on ourselves of having the good relationship of all of our friends. We've got the good relationship, you know, if that has something to do with it.
Yes. Perfection is obtainable only in tiny doses for a very short period of time. And many people are suffering because they are striving for perfection, and nothing less than is good enough. They are struggling internally. They usually make people around them feel pretty miserable because it's simply not possible to be on top 100% of the time. The formula I tend to use, just, you know, for myself and then conveying to my clients, is if things are good at 70-80%, you know, whatever scale you apply, but 70-80% good relationship, 70-80% good, you know, your work performance, that's actually excellent. Anything above 80%, that's a bonus. And then there will be moments like that. Anything below 70%, you will not feel good about it. You know, 50%, it means that it's just literally, it's a chance. And then so, but 70% might not feel good enough for people, you know, and then again, it might not feel that way about wedding or wedding planning, but probably a wedding. So like if it's perfect at 80%, that's probably excellent.
Yeah, that's a really great thing to remember, because couples that are, if you feel like you're not perfect, you feel like you're the only one, like everybody else is doing this better than we are. So it's good to self-evaluate and be like, actually, I'm generally pretty happy with my partner 80% of the time. It's a good reminder that like, that's okay. that's doing pretty well. You know, it's not a disaster. I mean, exactly. It's a good reminder for me. So
it's a consistency over time. It's not just like one moment it's 100%, and next moment it's 30%, and then it's 70, and then there is 10. That's exhausting.
All right. Is there anything else we need to talk about on this before we move on? Did we give some good tips?
Yes.
We were going to come back tips. To...
It was maybe some things, topics that Magdalena thinks might be good for couples to address, specific topics before the marriage.
Yeah, that they should talk about. Did you ever come up with it?
Well, I would say it touches upon pleasure. So that's the segue to sex and intimacy. Because most other things people feel comfortable talking about, you know, you just mentioned. Oh, how many kids do we want to have? Well, sometimes they are in disagreement. Mm-hmm. Sometimes life happens, so they cannot have as many kids as they want. Where to live? You know, people are comfortable talking about it. You know, there might be conflict, but they don't hesitate. They know the language. So it's usually sexuality, intimacy, and family of origin. How to deal with, not just with in-laws, but with... all the conflicts that will come from just simply having a family, and how to navigate this terrain. And so they are talking about these issues. And then we are recording this podcast now in the midst of the holiday season. So these conversations are happening. And but that's also something, you know, that's an ongoing conversation.
All right. And that's where we're going to stop this episode with Dr. Magdalena Fossey. We hope that you enjoyed hearing about ways to, you know, start off your relationship, communication, and perhaps you might think about seeking a couple's counselor, therapist, to help aid you in that process. So to stay tuned, next week you are going to hear the continuation of our interview with Dr. Magdalena Fossey, and next week we are talking about sex. Healthy, lovely, wonderful sex, and how to communicate about that with your partner. Thank you so much for listening. And as always, you can find us on Twitter at TBWP Podcast, on Facebook, and our email address is thebigweddingplanningpodcast@gmail.com. Write to us, let us know what you think, and let us know what you want to hear about. Thank you so much. Happy planning, and we will talk to you next week. Bye-bye.